Hoi, 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 cheeky monkey. This is a Bird Camp Hornland, an Arsenal podcast. I am your loose host, Jason Schrader, and with me tonight, an esteemed panel from across part of the globe. As always, he's here every week. It's our button monkey. It's Danny the GFP. Hello, Danny.
Nanu, nanu, you cheeky monkeys, and hello to Jason Isaacs if you're watching.
Lovely. From my continent over here in the Western Hemisphere, it's everybody's favorite bearded Canadian. He's the reason why I drink all dressed ruffles. It's Jeff Hollenfront. Jeff, welcome.
How you doing?
What's I'm good. Going on? I'm good. Glad to have you back on. Glad to have you back on.
Yeah, good to be here. You know, it's dust off the saddle, get back in it, and see what happens tonight.
I promise Chris won't buck too hard. Oh, I just gave it away. It's the prestigious pirate, our fourth panel member here tonight. It's Chris Carpenter. Hello, Mr. Carpenter.
Colonials. Hello. Greetings. How are we all?
I think by this podcast, we can tell who in the UK stays up well past their bedtime. I think that's what we're getting tonight. Who survives on little sleep or odd nocturnal hours like our GFP does. But we're not here to talk about sleep schedules and REM cycles and dream states. We're here to talk about the Arsenal, as we do every week. Been a bit since Arsenal played last. It was in the Europa League, a nice win to come back on aggregate and go through and advance to the next round. Next game coming up on April 1st, but we just wanted to get together, have a quick chat, give you guys something to tide your Arsenal loving years over until the next radio show or something like that. So without further ado, let's talk about the season so far. We've got sort of the tail end here coming up now. I'm going to start with Jeff on this one. Jeff, what are your thoughts so far on the season? And is everything going how you expected it to go so far in Emery's first year?
You know, that's a good question. First of all, I just want to say I'm glad we're putting out a podcast right about now, because it's typically right in this period of the interlull that there is some fake controversy that whips all of us up on social media. So if you're listening to this, maybe just leave Twitter off till the game on the first, because like I said, there's usually some sort of controversy or divisive argument that starts over nothing, usually around the Tuesday of interlull. So far so good, knock on wood, stay the course, gentlemen. You know, the season so far, it's been a really interesting season, and you know, if you asked me before the season what my expectations were, I was hopeful of a top four finish, and that was based on a number of things. I thought we were a decent team last year that struggled a lot with our away form. I think that's well documented. And to me, there was a good team in there. Now, obviously, maybe not everyone's going to fit into Emery's mold, but certainly a team that I thought was capable of more from last year. And I think that would have been, if you tied down most Gooners, they would have said the same thing, that was the frustration, is that we were very, very strong at home last season, but then when we got away from the Emirates, we couldn't close out a result. So looking ahead at this season, I was hopeful of a top four. I wasn't sure what to expect of Unai Emery. I mean, I know Chris could talk at great length about his time at PSG and likely as well as time at Sevilla. I liked what I heard in terms of his dossier of what he brought. He was talking about improving players. He was talking about doing a lot of work off the field, video analysis. And these were sort of things that, while we weren't sure if they were happening at the club, were sort of a constant criticism. You would read, you know, we don't do enough to prepare for games. We weren't maybe improving players. So, you know, in general, I liked what we had going into the season. I'd say the City game, you know, the first game of the season was a bit of a write-off, but it was really the Chelsea game that turned it for me. And in particular, there were things about that game that I really liked. Now, obviously, we lost 3-2 at Stamford Bridge, but for me, we created chances at will. I thought that we looked in that game fairly confident on the ball. Off the ball was a different story. We were a little hesitant at the back, and I think we had some defensive blunders. But for me, there was enough there for me to believe that we could go on and be a top four squad. And I stand by that. Now, looking at the season as a whole, I know there's been a lot of criticism leveled at the squad and at Unai Emery about his consistency. Folks not really understanding, you know, the fluidity of play. I've heard it on other podcasts. I've seen it in blogs. We see it on social media. You know, not really understanding what Unai Emery is after. And I think it's just too early to say. And there's two reasons why. One, we're in a results business. His job is to take the squad that he mainly had. He did have a transfer window, but I think that's a mixed bag we can talk about in terms of who he brought in and how well they've acclimatized the squad. But he's got to get them into the squad. He's got to start to bed a system. And we don't really know if that system is the one he's going for or the one that's going to get results. So he's got to be pragmatic, right? He's got to get results. He's got to get that top four. So I don't think it's really fair that we totally judge what he's done at the club. I think given those circumstances, given the fact that he's got to steady the ship short term, and then that second thing, looking long term over, A, who does he want to bring in? How will potential Champions League money, if we can get in there, impact the team? What's the longer term playing style that he wants to go? And you know, how does he get to that end state? It's tough when you have those short term and a long term goal in front of you. In terms of just kind of making sure we get those results and not lose sight of what's immediately ahead, but then looking ahead, you know, hopefully a season or two seasons out when the system's really bad, when he's had a few transfer windows. So for me, I think the season's gone very well. We're in a really great position leading into the last set of games. I think Emery, from my perspective, I'm pretty chill on how he's approaching things. I know people get wound up about three at the back, five at the back, wing backs. You know, is he playing Guendouzi? Is he not playing Guendouzi? Is Laka getting a game? I've been pretty chill this year about it, just because at the end of the day, we are grinding some results out. And like I said, that short-term goal of just getting in the top four, it looks like it's doable. We're in the right spot. So, you know, for me, I think the season so far has been great. I think, you know, if we were to mark it right now, maybe a 7.5 out of 10. If we get into that Champions League, I think you've got to say it's closer to like a 9. So, you know, fingers crossed heading into the last set of games and the last few fixtures that we can get over the line.
Chris, coming to you on this, Jeff mentioned the pragmatism of Unai Emery and changing up, obviously, formations, different players and different matches. You watched a lot of what he did at PSG. Is that pragmatism more a reflective sort of his overall style? Or does he use that pragmatism in a much more sort of direct way, in an in-match way, where he knows he only wants to, this is a game where I need to be more pragmatic? Or is that just sort of indicative of who he is as a manager?
I think it's come more at Arsenal, to be honest. Certainly more than what he had at PSG, because at PSG he was quite wedded to the same style of formation wise, the same sort of players. You know, he had certain people that he relied on. He didn't really wait or deviate from that set up too much. I can't speak as much about Sevilla as I can about PSG, but even back in those days, I do remember him playing with wide players, with a powerful centre forward, and sticking to that. So I don't know whether it's a bit of a change that he's gone through with Arsenal. I think the injuries have played a big part in the systems we played this year and his approach as a manager, because if you said to him at the start of the season, you know, you're going to lose arguably three very important first team players in and around the same period of time, and you're also going to have a situation where you've got player like Mustafi, you know, who I try and be nice, but hasn't reached the heights we might have hoped he would have. He's almost had to accommodate people into positions, and he's had to fit systems around the players he had available. There was also the Koscielny situation. Would he come back to the level he was at? I think he's come back higher the level than any of us expected him to, and probably the manager as well. So that's changed the setup in the defence. So I think he has developed as a manager. I think he has changed as a manager. I always felt PSG was probably, a slightly, I wouldn't say too big a job for him, but I felt it was slightly in a tier, slightly out of the comfort zone for him.
Do you think it was out of his comfort zone before the Neymar move, and it was sort of in his sort of pocket there? And do you think when Neymar came in, with that big player name, or do you think it was just in general sort of maybe just a slight half a step above him?
I think slightly half a step. I think if he'd have managed Arsenal first and then gone to PSG, I think that would have been the logical step. But the problem you've got when you manage a club of PSG's backing is your expected success, and you know that they take the three domestic trophies almost as a given. Your job there is to build the brand, bring in the high-profile players, manage the egos, and perform in the Champions League. And when that match with Barcelona went down, you know, I think we all sort of knew which way it was going to go. That said, like you said, I think that the Neymar situation did change a lot of that, because a lot of the power was taken away from him in terms of not just you play this player, but also it affected who else he could sign, because he essentially couldn't really sign anybody else. Whereas I think Arsenal and Emery is, to me, feels like a quite a good fit, and it has done since he's arrived. It'll be really interesting to see where the club goes in the next 3 to 4 years, whether we take the sort of step of becoming like a lot of clubs are, where they are changing managers on a 3 to 4 year basis, some even more than that, or whether we go down the route of continuity. If you look at the Premier League at the moment, I think the top six clubs, barring Manchester United, have all had the same manager. Actually, Chelsea don't come into that, and in fairness, they've had a new manager this year. But you look at Mr. Wonfuckle at Spurs, you look at Klopp and Guardiola, they've been in place for a long time. And you could say, yeah, you know, it's obvious that clubs wouldn't dispense with them. But ultimately, they are clubs that expect success. And if they don't get that success, it's interesting that they've chosen to stick with the managers they've got rather than make a hasty change. So I'd like to see us stick with him. And, you know, barring anything dramatic, obviously, or, you know, if we go off a cliff and finish eighth and, you know, bail out of the Europa League, then we might have to look again. But given what he's got to work with, and the fact that he has adjusted his style and the formations, I'm like Jeff said, I'm pretty happy with where things are at the moment. And it would be a massive boost if we could make that qualification for the Champions League again, because I'd be really interested to see how many players, you know, would be interested in us. And I don't mean big names, but I think we're perfectly placed to sign some of the best young talent in Europe if we can get the qualification for the Champions League, because young players aren't so much motivated by money now. It's more about playing for a massive club, and you know, we are the biggest club in London, and if we're back in the Champions League, that will sell that to those sort of players, I think.
You look at the opportunity that we lost out a few years ago when we bought one player, and like Fife always says, we had all that money in the bank, which would have bought you three world-class players or two. We didn't spend that money. So next season, the money that we had would have bought you two world-class players. And the season after, you might have got one. So now with Chelsea and Man City possibly having this transfer ban, and FIFA and UEFA looking into the teams that have got oil money, and that's how they're buying their success, no matter what country they're in, this summer could be really important for us. Because if they manage to make those transfer bans stick, there are going to be a hell of a lot of half-decent players that we can pick from other clubs, like Leicester falling apart. They've got some decent players. And there's players and teams all around the world that have got decent players. And if we're in the Champions League, coupled with the fact that Ornstein said we're more like £100 million at least, that's before you add in probably the sponsorship deals, before you add in extra money for winning the Europa League, which we've got a good chance of getting there if everyone stays fixed. We've only got 2.5 players out injured at the moment. And then you add into things like if we do get into the Champions League, then we're going to get all that extra money, guaranteed money, because with the squad, even with the squad we've got at the moment, we would probably make it into the last 16 in the Europa League. I mean, in the Champions League, we're the kind of player, oh, if everyone's fit like they are at the moment, we're doing really well. And then when you add into the fact, I was just looking at last season, away from home, we lost 11 Premier League games. That is, we won 4, drew 4, lost 11. This season, we've only lost 5 away. Our home form is roughly the same as it was last season. If we can have, I mean, that brilliant spell we had of 23 unbeaten, that may have covered a few things over, because there was a lot of tactical changes. But at home this season, we've lost one game in the Premier League and we've drawn 2 games in the Premier League. The rest of them, we've all won. And I'm just looking at our running. I know I'm moving on a little bit, but our running for the rest of the season, we've got 5 away games. Everton, Leicester, Watford, Wolves. So it's Everton, Watford and Wolves have all lost 5 Premier League games at home. Leicester have lost 7 and Burnley have lost 8. So it's not like we're going to go to places that are fortresses at home. It's not like we're going to go to Liverpool where they've lost none, or Man City where they've lost 1, or teams where they've lost 2. All of those teams concede goals at home. Then you've got to take into consideration the fact that for the likes of Wolves, their season is virtually over. Watford's season is over. Everton and Leicester's season is over. Burnley, they're playing for their lives, but they've had a bit of a purple patch recently. And so all these things taken into consideration, I think it's been a magnificent season because of all the stuff. And you can see, like I was talking to Jace for an hour last night, and we were saying that Ramsey didn't fit into his team, and nor did Ozil. But we've seen that as Emery's team has progressed, we have 3 at the back for one playing type of playing, then we have 4 at the back for another type of playing. And I think he's realised that Ramsey and Ozil both do fit into his squad, maybe not for every game, but for the sometimes when they do play in the starting 11 against the right teams, which is what I want to see. And I think that's why we've come on so much from last season, where it was we play the same formation virtually against whoever we're playing against. I know at one point we changed from 4 at the back to 3 at the back, but then that would be against everybody. But now Emery's going, no, this team plays like this. We're having this formation. They do this. We're doing this formation. Things have changed. Right, we're going to go from playing 2 strikers to playing 1 striker and 2 wingers during the middle of a game. And that's the kind of stuff that's only going to make us better and better. And that's why I've got nothing negative to say about this season. If it wasn't for the fact of injuries, you take out the 2 fullbacks from any Premier League team, as in Monreal and Bellerin, you go, you're not having those. And we're taking out your two best central defenders. Go on, carry on. And I like to see them struggle like the way we've struggled. I think he's been brilliant.
Yeah, I think we're getting what we should have expected out of Emery for this first season. I think the recent uptick in form is positive to see, for the fact that I think, you know, we can all – I think one of my largest criticisms of the last manager in Wenger, for all the great that he did, you know, especially early on, I think that the biggest thing that would happen was he wasn't getting the best out of the players all at the same time. We would have players sort of going through patches in the season, but all separately patches where they were playing really well. Giroud would be on, but Ramsey wouldn't be on. Or Ozil would be on, but nobody else could finish. And I think now we're seeing, as a team, our form from front to back now has really, really been elevated, and our consistency has stepped up. Which has been really, really key. And that's been the biggest – wins and losses sort of aside for me. That was the biggest indicator of how we would finish, is what our consistency would be like. And I'm a really, really big fan of what Emery has done, I think, with changing our training regimen as well. And I know Chris could probably speak to this even better than I could, just about bringing in more intensity, sort of more, you know, higher intensity, small-sided games, higher intensity sort of, you know, 1v1 type of scenarios, and go even training longer as well than Wenger did. And you know, getting a better feel for his players, letting his players actually exert themselves more, you know, even more during training than even during the game at times, which you definitely need. So I'm a real big fan of that consistency. That's what we've needed. And I knew if we could get that consistency, the results we wanted would follow. And I think we've seen that. And OG, I think you've got something on this as well, right?
No, I think there's been a couple really good points made around injuries and training, and you were mentioning it, Shredder, and Danny as well, around injuries. It really, when we saw Bellerin go out, it was bad when we saw Holding go, because Holding had really started to look like he was going to cement his spot in the squad. I mean, a bit fortunate that Kajelny came back from injury when he did, that offset it. But it was really Bellerin that I thought was going to hurt us. I thought, you know, when that happened, we might be in a bit of trouble. And that was really down to the fact that, tactically speaking, it looked like a lot of our offense was going through Bellerin. He was playing as a wingback. He was getting up and down that right-hand side. How often did he get the assist or the pre-assist on plays? He was crossing the ball low. And I think for the first part of the season, where a lot of our goals came from, he was still trying to figure out when to go and when to stay. And a lot of the early games, he got caught out because they didn't quite have that balance right. And as they started to play through that long unbeaten streak, Bellerin was really, it was around, I mean, it wasn't just down to him, it was around all of the players finding where their feet were under Emery, but he was really starting to figure some things out. And then when we lost him at the point that we did in the season, I thought, oh no, we're definitely in trouble here. But full kudos to the squad and to the manager and the staff, because even though we lost them in a really difficult period, you know, we were going through heavy fixture congestion, the difficult period through the holidays, we didn't really miss a step. I mean, there were some up and down results in there, but overall, we are exactly where we need to be. And like I said, that is a credit to this team. On training, what they did this international or interlull break really, I thought was just a really positive move, and that's that they went down to Dubai, played a friendly today. They did a training camp. You could see the sun. For anybody who's if London's anywhere like where I am, you don't see the sun from sort of November 1st till April 1st. Although I know London's had some unseasonably warm weather, but typically you don't see the sun. People need to go and see the sun. We didn't have a winter break. We don't have a winter break in the Premier League. And I think it's done a world of good. And in fact, I'm pretty sure I saw some quotes from Lacazette saying that this was a really good plan. Hopefully they've recharged their batteries. They've done some team camaraderie type activities. And I really like that. So, full credit to the squad, full credit to the team. Taking a look at that break, you know, some guys went off an international break, but it did look like the core of the squad was there. And it did look like we saw Welbeck, Holding, and Bellerin out with the squad, which I love to see that as well. Even if they can't do full training, just being in and around the team is good for team morale. So I'm excited with where the team is at right now.
Yeah, I think, Every manager always talks about team spirit. And I think you can see it. It's infectious sort of through the entire squad now. And I'll sort of transition into our next topic, which is players that have done well. And I think more so, I think two players I want to point out, maybe not necessarily for doing well. And trust me, I think they've done great this season. But two players that I think have had a massive sort of positive effect on squad morale is the relationship between Aubameyang and Lacazette. I think it's infectious throughout the team, and you see people happier to come to training. They want to be smiling and happy with those guys, and joking when they can joke, but also they see that those two guys are some of the most serious professionals when they need to be, and it's a great sort of representation for a lot of the young players on our squad to be able to see. And oh man, sounds like a dog pounds going outside my door. And it really sounds like it's a really just going through the entire team. So I'm going to go to you, Danny, on this one first. Give me your two players this year, and I'll come to everybody on this here as well. But Danny, I'm going to start with you. Give me your two players this year that have really impressed you the most.
That's a good question, because there's so many of them that have, in one way or another, the most improved for me would be Iwobi. But if I had to pick, if I was giving out awards at the moment for the best two players, it's going to have to be Lacazette, because the amount of grief that he got for the first half of last season because he was injured and he was carrying the team, partly because me and Chris said he was going to be magnificent for Arsenal, and he has shown he's adapted his game to be able to be not just the Ian Wright-style poacher, but the kind of bloke who can pay with his back to goal. He was magnificent at Lyon because he had Nabil Fekir playing behind him and playing in the Farmers League. And if you're a half-decent player.
There it is. The face palm.
That's the first time people can see it live on a pre-recorded pod. Chris's head shakes. Last week, there'd have been about 50 of those. But I'm going to have to go with Lacazette. Oh, this is a tough one. There have been so many players. I mean, Torreira started off brilliantly, but then he's dropped off recently. Guendouzi started off magnificently, but then he's made a few mess-ups, and I think that's why he's been dropped from the team. I'm probably going to go Ramsey. I'm going to say Ramsey because he knows he's leaving the club. And if any old football fans will remember back in the day, Steve McManaman was in the same situation, played his contract out of Liverpool, one of their star players. That last season, he didn't go for a single tackle. He jogged around the pitch like it was a warm-up for the entire season to make sure he didn't get injured. Ramsey hasn't done that. Ramsey's gone and got stuck in. He's given it his all. He's never been in the papers moaning. He's just been magnificent the entire time just for his sheer professionalism. And then you add on to that the goals he's scored, the performances he's played. He's been left out of the team. And when he's come back in, he's done a job instantly, not like Ozil, who admittedly has done pretty good when he has come back in, and he seems to be bucking his ideas up. It's been like, Ramsey, you're playing okay, I'll give it my all, and he's done that. So Lacazette and Ramsey for me.
I'm gonna go ahead and give mine out here before we go to the last two panelists. I'm going to have to agree with you on Lacazette. I think his work rate in this type of team setup, where especially in Chris may even talk to this because I'm sure he'll wax lyrical about him in a second. I have no doubt, even if he's not his one of his best players of the season, he'll still wax lyrical about Alexander Lacazette. But for sure, I think his work rate in this system where we have to press has been phenomenal. And another shout out here, honorable mention in the same category, the same thread is Danny Welbeck. That their pressing of the ball and their pressing of defenders and goalkeepers, I could probably count, what, 5 goals this year that have been scored directly off of their sort of pressing, creating sloppy giveaways that either they win or a Ramsey or a Shaka or an Iwobi or somebody wins, or a Mkhitaryan, and gets the ball back into the opposing team's box pretty quickly, and we're able to benefit from it. So his work rate there, I think, is magnificent. And for me, he's almost undroppable at this point in that. And I love what Aubameyang brings to us. But if we're only going to play one up front, I would much rather it be Lacazette, because the work rate that this style of play that we've been utilizing, especially more recently, really suits Alexander Lacazette. My second sort of player of the year so far is going to go to Bern Leno. And Bern Leno is a player who I was really worried in the first month and a half, 2 months of the season when he wasn't playing. They were saying, you know, there were reports coming out of the training ground that Emery, you know, was not a big fan of him. And he, you know, I was starting where I was like, well, if Cech is this poor with distribution and Bern Leno is still not getting a match, how bad is Bern Leno? He's done nothing, and granted, he has made mistakes. Manuel Neuer still makes mistakes. If you watch Bayern, they will give up a sloppy goal because of Manuel Neuer. Bern Leno has made mistakes, but what he has done is he has probably single-handedly won us 9 points off the saves that he's made, at least this season, and some very crucial, obviously the double save against Tottenham, everybody's going to go on about, the save against, or was that Man United? One of the two, I can't quite remember now. And there was another save against Mania. He has come up big for us in so many situations where we have been defensively lax and our defense has let us down. Bern Leno has been the man that has allowed us to stay in these matches and at least get a point from them, if not go on and take full points. So I think from my standpoint, it those two, again, for me, the good teams start with a good spine. And I think having Alexander Lacazette up front as your striker, with his work rate, his ability to finish from tight angles and be that poacher like Ian Wright was, and then to have the keeper who can play out of the back, who's solid with his feet, he can be the sweeper keeper, but he can also save those shots that you absolutely have to have saved. Those have been my big two. OG, we'll come to you next. Who have been your two top players of the year so far?
Well, you've stolen both of mine. I'd have to agree.
You can confirm my bias and please go on.
I think you hit on all the points with Lacazette. I mean, I think in particular he wasn't starting at the beginning of the season, and when he did come on, it was really his work rate, as you mentioned, that won him his spot. So for me, Lacazette absolutely, and Bern Leno, as you mentioned, to take over for Peter Cech, and some of the saves that he's made this year, the double save was Tottenham. But he's had some amazing games. But I'll throw another player into the mix, and I may get roasted for this, but just in full disclosure, I agree with what OJ said, but it's kind of boring when we all agree. So I think an honorable mention has to be given to Granit Xhaka. He's played in the spine of the team, and he seems to be growing up a bit. And really what I mean by that is he hasn't looked as guilty as he has in previous seasons in terms of getting stupid cards. He is playing more like the sort of that metronome within the team that creates the pace of the play, and I think he's had a pretty good season. He's had a lot of haters down the years, but I like the fact that he looks like he's growing up and he's playing good football. So I'll give it a, give him an honorable mention. And as much as I don't want to admit it, because I was a little hard on this guy earlier this season, let's talk a little bit about Iwobi. He is starting to play some super football. So for me, and the reason I get a little hard on him, I know he's a young player, and we need to support our young players coming out of the academy. And I do. So, you know, it's not like I'm out on social media calling him an idiot or anything like that. But, you know, for me, I haven't always thought Iwobi had the substance to be a top football player. And that's down to, I think, the fact that at times he's capable of a mistake that a youngster can make. But also it's around it's really around his body language that there's something that really bothers me. He gets a look on his face where he doesn't look like he honestly cares. And I don't know what that is about that, but it really sets me off. But I have to say, as the season's progressed, and yeah, he doesn't displace any of the players that we've talked about so far, but as the season's progressed, he looks like he's putting the work in. He's working with the staff, and he is creating he's creating goals. He's been our creative outlet. So full credit to Alex Iwobi, because for me, he has played into this season nicely. So I hope that continues. Again, he's not my favorite player, but credit where it's due.
Yeah, well said there. I feel very similar about Shaka. I just knew I couldn't say that without getting roasted for my constant defense of him. And I think if you look at our record with Shaka in the team and out of the team, I think that sort of speaks for itself as well this season. So
you had to leave a little meat on the bone for me there.
I did. Mr. Carpenter, El Pirito. I don't know if that's the correct Spanish pronunciation, so my apologies. But what does the good captain say of the pirate ship? What does he say about his two favorite players this year? Who you got there?
Won't really surprise to know. It won't surprise you guys to know that Alex Lacazette is definitely in my list. I think everybody's touched on the reasons why already, so I won't cover it too much in detail, but just his overall work rate, commitment. You know, every time he comes on the pitch, I think the things he's done off the pitch have been brilliant as well. His reactions to getting subbed, he's never sulked. He just got on with his job. He's got important goals at key times, makes our front line better. And that's not to take away anything from what Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's done, because I think he's been far more of a plus than, if I'm honest, I thought he might be when we signed him. I had concerns. I did think maybe he could be a little bit too big time for us, and he's sort of showing that he really loves this club and his new environment, and the two of those two, they blend off each other so well, and they're obviously a really good partnership on and off the pitch. So yeah, I think Lacazette for me would be a player of the year if you were going to have one. I was really torn between the sort of second pick. Alex Iwobi is definitely one I would put into the mix, but I'm going to introduce two others, which I just can't split for different reasons. might not surprise you to know they're both French, but Mathieu Guendouzi and Laurent Koscielny. For very differing reasons, really, at both ends of the spectrum. I think what people need to understand that I don't mean that sound patronising, but the levels that Guendouzi has hit from where he was playing last season are astonishing. This is a kid who has come in and has run a midfield for us in a number of games, having been a sort of a fringe player at Lorient for two seasons before getting his breakthrough just last season before he signed for us. For those who don't know, Lorient were a French first division established club. We got relegated. I say we, it's the team I follow, got relegated at the back of last end of last season. And obviously this year have been in Ligue 1. And, you know, when he was playing, when they were in Ligue 1, he wasn't, you know, he was thought of as a player who possibly would make the grade, but he certainly wasn't a first team player until they got relegated, and then he made the step up. And for a kid of that age, And it's not just about what he does. I'm sure there's areas he needs to improve upon. You know, his distribution sometimes needs to be quicker. You know, he does sometimes turn into trouble. You're going to get that from young players. But I get really bored of the same old stuff coming out about, you know, oh, have you seen what Jadon Sancho's done? Oh, have you seen what Callum Hudson-Odoi's done? He's worth 25 million. This is a kid who's better than both of those, in my opinion. Different type of player, granted. Phil Foden is probably a better comparison, if you will. And I think those two are on a similar level. But because he's in the engine room, I don't think he's got anywhere near the credit that he deserves. And when people are saying he's one of our most sellable assets, I mean, A, please don't sell him. But B, that speaks absolute volumes of what the club have done with him and what he's done with the club. And to draw a line under him, the thing I love most about him is he's a proper Arsenal boy already. And I know I'm going to get hate for this, but hey, I don't care. It reminds me a lot of what Cesc Fabregas had when he first came in. He came in and he was very quickly an Arsenal boy, an Arsenal player. And he, you know, he was sort of wedded to the club. Bellerin's another good example. And in that North London derby, you know, that was a prime example that all the players went off to celebrate our goal. Again, Doozy's giving it shit to the Spurs fans. You know, I like that in a player. And then just briefly on Koscielny, again, it's not just because he's French, and that's what people think. But again, to come back from what our own Dom has told us and a few others, you know, in that trade would have said, for him to get anywhere near the level that he has got or got back to is amazing. To get arguably, I think, come back an almost better player is absolutely amazing. You sit and you watch that documentary of his rehab and what he went through. It was almost like this was a guy who was going to prove a lot of people wrong. I know a lot of people had sort of said, well, you know, we need to get rid. He's never going to come back the same player. I remember in January, the national press was saying that, he's not Emery's. Emery's not a fan. He's going to go and play for Aston Villa. Aston Villa. I mean, seriously, you know, he would probably walk back into the French national side now if he was 3 years younger.
He's played 11 out of the last 12 Premier League games.
Exactly.
Never thought we'd have seen that.
At 32, 33. I mean, you know, and he is the best captain we've got. You know, I genuinely believe that. Don't get me wrong. I don't think he'll be in there around for another 10 years. You know, obviously we are going to have to look to replace him long term, but someone of that stature to come back and to lead the club, and he came back at such an important time where we really were on our ass with injuries. You know, he's been brilliant. So it's kind of an honourable mention, but if you nailed my balls to the wall, I'd have to pick Lacazette and Guendouzi as the two. But yeah, the honourable mentions for Iwobi and Koscielny as well.
I'll also say, I think specifically after the first couple of months of the season, somebody that I'll say who's really going to rile up somebody who lives in Wales at the moment is Socrates Papastathopoulos. That's full name there, just to impress everybody. I think what he's done as well beside Koscielny, and I think those two together really complement each other so well. Such intelligent defenders. It sort of the same areas of their careers. Obviously, Koscielny coming back from a major injury and you know, Socrates is not, but I love seeing Socrates defend and seeing the way he wants to get in those tackles and wants to, you know, he wants to be that guy. And you don't see that from a lot of defenders. And I think that's been, you know, I'm not going to say he's been our best. He may have actually been our best defender thinking about it just over the course of the season. When you think about who he's up against, just for consistency and longevity due to the fact that, you know, maybe we, you know, have had a couple of poor injuries back there. But I definitely think he's somebody who has turned a lot of heads, especially due to the fact that I think we all had some low expectations of him, and he's coming in and really, really set it up. So let's just go ahead, hop over to top four. I know we sort of hit on how the season was going, and we all sort of had mentioned earlier about, you know, where we thought we were at. But Chris, I'm going to come right back to you on this. Is top four, you know, a realistic goal for this team? We're not going to do the standard, at least on this pod. We may do it in the future, so I don't want to but we're not gonna go through each game and figure out what our points tally is with us and all of our other competitors for it. But do you see top four as actually? I'm not even gonna say obtainable. Do you think that it's something that like basically is in our own hands at this point?
Yeah. I top four. I think top three. I said at the start of the season I thought we could finish third. I'm not going to change that view. I think Liverpool and Manchester City are unfortunately in the distance at the moment, and probably will be. Man City will be for until the money runs out, and Liverpool will be until they slip up. I don't look at our squad. And I look at Man United's and I look at Chelsea's and I look at the other lots. Well, I try and avoid looking at theirs, let's be honest. But nothing scares me about them. I think arguably, and I'm sure a lot of Arsenal fans listening to this would find this hilarious. The perfect scenario is that they move into their new ground and finish fifth. I mean, that would be hilarious. And I do think they are the ones at risk the most. You know, their manager has lost it completely, which I find hilarious. They're heavily reliant on a couple of players, which, you know, we saw recently. And their squad is thin. And I almost kind of, well, I can't cheer them on against Man City, obviously, but I always would like to see them go through that as well, just to stretch them even further. But I think they're at risk. I think Manchester United, credit where credit's due, Solskjaer has done a very good job, but I'm not convinced that he's the second coming of Jesus just yet. I can't see Mark Goldbridge's smug face too much longer, so that needs to stop immediately. But I think the PSG games and indeed more recently the Wolves games expose the fact that they have got a very talented squad, but they are still quote-unquote in transition. And I still think you can get a United, particularly defensively. And as for Chelsea, I mean, they are the clown car bobbling down the road. You just don't know what you're going to get. And they're as liable to lose a game as they are to win one. So I don't know. I think we're more than capable of reaching top four. If you said to me now, would you settle for top four? Yeah, I would. But I genuinely think we can push on and get top three. I think it's Spurs Liverpool this weekend, isn't it? I think
Spurs have got to go like, away at Man City and away at Liverpool. We're 1 point behind Spurs. That's 6 points they're not going to get. Recent form, what do they get? 1 point from four games.
Yeah, and I tell you the other thing that I'm looking at with Spurs. Do you remember? I know this is painful for us all to think back, but do you remember Wayne Bridgegate when we lost to Chelsea in that Champions League semi-final? And we basically went out of three cups in a week, didn't we? And we lost the league and it all went tits up. Spurs have got to play Man City. Was it three times in 10 days? Now, if they take a smashing three times, please God, that could easily smash their season into bits because they have got nothing else to play for. And you know, they take a few hammerings there and hopefully lose to Liverpool at the weekend as well. The wheels really could come bouncing off. So,
Man City in the Champions League.
Yeah. I mean, there's no winners in that ties there, but yeah, I think we could leapfrog them. I think probably Man United are the biggest opposition, just in terms of their fixture list and, you know, in terms of when fit their players are. Probably a slight cut above us in terms of the squad. And as I say, Chelsea, I wouldn't put a bet on Chelsea, let alone a commitment of where they're going to finish. You just don't know what you're going to get from week to week. So I'll stick with third and I'll await the comment section chopping me to pieces because I'm sure they will, but that's where I'm sticking.
Danny, are you going to go with third? Are you going to stay with fourth? Or do you think that we're going to finish outside of the Champions League places again?
Well, the thing is, either Man United, Arsenal or Spurs are going to finish fifth, and that means no Champions League. So Tottenham and Man United have got to push for the Champions League. They've got to go all out to try and do it, and that's going to weaken them in the league. We don't have to. If we win all of our games, we finished fourth, minimum of fourth, because we're on the same. We're 2 points ahead of Man United, and we can win the rest of the games for the rest of the season. It's in our own hands, as it often is with teams.
And it doesn't matter. The Europa League doesn't matter. For me, that's a side dish that I don't really want to have at the moment. All I want to do is put all of our energy and thought into making sure we get to the Champions League via the league rather than the Europa League. We've got a couple of tough games coming up. I mean, Napoli are second in Serie A, but they're, again, compared to Juventus, everyone is second in Serie A. They're never going to overtake them. So we can do it. I'm going to agree with Chris, third place. Just the fact that Spurs have got to play, like Chris was saying, Man City three times in 11 days. They're playing them when they play them twice, they're going to the Etihad twice in 3 days. That is going to ruin their confidence, or they're going to be petted up to the tits. And when they're on that come down, they've got some tough games to go away and do. Man United have been doing the same, because those two teams really need Champions League football next season. If we don't get Champions League football next season, we're not going to go bankrupt. We haven't invested hundreds of millions of pounds in players and a stadium and all this other stuff that we can't afford. We're self-sustaining. We'll be fine if we end up in Europa League next season, but we won't. I could easily see us finishing third.
And OG, your thoughts on fourth?
I agree. I agree with everything that's being said there. I think when you look at the teams around us and you look at the fixtures that they have, it's no secret that we have the nicest run in. I think when I looked at it the other day, here's what we've got. We've got Newcastle, Everton, Watford away, Palace at home, Leicester away, Brighton at home, and then Burnley away can be tricky, and of course Wolves has to be scheduled Wolves away. When you look at teams like Chelsea, they have to play Liverpool away. They've got to play Man United away. When you look at Man United, they've got to play City at home and Chelsea at home, two tough games right there. And then when you look at Spurs, they've got Liverpool this weekend away, and they've got to play City away. So, I mean, the run in itself, it is in our hands. We are in fourth by 1 point behind Spurs. This is something we can do. And then coming on to a point that the guys made, we're really, I think, in a much better place. And again, kind of, I had mentioned this already, this trip that we took to Dubai. We see a team that's together. We see a team that's happy. We see a team that's working for each other. We know what's ahead of us, as opposed to Man United. You know, the wheels have come off the bus in recent weeks in terms of the league. When they lost to us, they lost to Wolves. A bit of the shine has come off Solskjaer and his management. So not really sure where they're at. Spurs, same thing. They're not a form team right now. They look like they're getting a bit shaky, and you know, moving into their ground right now, that could be a good thing, but it could also be a really bad thing, especially if they're starting to get the lay of the land for Wembley. And then Chelsea is a clown car, complete clown car at the moment. They don't seem to be able to put anything together consistently. They've got troubles between the players and the manager. You know, the whole Kepa gate, where he wanted to be the manager in the League Cup final. So I think we're really well positioned. I think third is definitely doable, not just 1 point behind, but only one goal behind Tottenham on the goal difference. I think we should go for it. It's there to be taken. I think we've got a team that, to me, look like they could close out the season strong with a nice run here. So for sure third. I'll join Danny, and I will join Chris in the hate train that comes in our comments. And I say we go for it. How about you, OJ?
I'm going to be negative Nancy to a degree, and I'm going to say we will finish fourth. We are playing more consistent, but we still have some errors and we still have some slip ups, and I think we still will. And I do think we will make the Champions League, but I do think it'll be as fourth. But yeah, obviously third, it'll be great. I'm not rooting for us to finish fourth. Anything above there is definitely great. I want to say the one thing that I feel that would maybe set us apart if we do get back into Champions League, you know, United, Chelsea are always going to have money. They're always going to be able to buy their way back into competitions. I don't think Arsenal can win the league if we're not in the Champions League and don't have those available funds for transfers to buy the players that we need to push on for Premier League titles. So I think it's insanely crucial that we get back into the top four. And I don't, I'm not going to try to be, you know, overly optimistic and go, let's, yeah, third is ours. I think I see us finishing fourth and really, really excited here. So, all right. So here's what we're going to do. Danny's got a wonderful list, and I don't want to negate Danny's wonderful work on putting together a run list here for the show. But I am going to skip something because he's got in here summer transfers. The problem is without a real technical director like we're trying to do, transfers may be a little bit interesting, and we may be getting ahead of ourselves. So I'm going to skip the transfers part here, Danny. I'm going to go straight to technical director. Danny, we'll start with you since you're the first up here on my screen.
The transfers thing, it makes a big difference whether we're in the Europa League or the Champions League next season of who.
Oh, absolutely.
Good call, Jason.
So who for those transfers, let's say we get back in the Champions League, who's that technical director you want after we have had some controversy, as you say across the pond, some controversy, as we say over here on this side of the Atlantic. As we've had some controversy over Monchi not joining and him going back to Sevilla and it being sort of in limbo right now, who's your technical director that you would bring in?
I have no idea. I'm not even sure what their job is.
Why did you put the question in there? Unbelievable.
You wrote all this out in the WhatsApp group earlier today. They're all listening. I would just do as I'm told. I would go for someone like, when I was talking on a podcast last week with my mate Kevin Campbell. Hello, Kev, if you're listening, we'll have to meet up again soon for brunch. He was saying that there's someone from inside Arsenal there, a Spanish bloke who's been at the club for years.
Catigal.
Bless you. That was him. Personally, I'd go for someone like Edu, who is currently with the Brazilian national team. He's done stuff back at my Brazilian club, Corinthians. But I don't think I'm qualified to say. I mean, I'm not qualified to talk about most things Arsenal. I can just make it up. Even this, I'm struggling to make it up. So I'll just go with whoever people think is right. I doubt very much anyone's going to listen to us. But I think Kevin did have a point when he said it's got to be someone who knows the club, which is why I'd like Edu, which is why Monchi seemed to be someone who was going to come in, buy players, and then with a view to maybe moving them on.
There's a French manager that's out there that may know about the club a little bit.
None.
He's looking for a job.
None.
I think Laurent Blanc is busy at the moment, to be honest. But
cheeky Chris. Chris, I'll go to you. Who's your pick for TD?
Andre Arshavin. Just because it'd be fucking hilarious.
For everyone.
I am Gunnar. Maybe the new Mkhitaryan doll that's been released. Mickey. Words fail me. In all seriousness, this is probably the one area of football hipsterism that I'm not particularly au fait with, in that I don't know too many. I think the Monchi one is a bit disappointing because it seemed like a good fit. I think Mark Overmars would have been the one I would have gone for, but he's obviously signed a new deal. I think I'm probably with Danny on this one. I think Edu, during his time at the club, you know, he seemed to be, he was a very intelligent guy, very switched on. I tell you what, I might pull slightly from left field, and it's another Brazilian, and I don't know whether this would be a guy who would be even remotely interested in this role. Not quite. Gilberto Silva. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's very well thought of in the footballing world. He's got a lot of good contacts. He knows his way around. Yeah, he knows his way around a lot of clubs. He has got some experience in sort of backroom type of roles since retirement. And on that level, could you even extend that to a Robert Pires or someone like that? It's a really hard one to judge.
Yeah.
And I think if you're obviously people are saying that the one thing I would say is that people are saying, oh, Steve Morrow, that's going to be terrible. Nobody knows him. Nobody respects him. Well, I don't necessarily subscribe to that because nobody really knows how good a negotiator that is. You know, Dick Law was supposed to be fantastic and he couldn't get us Gary fucking Cahill. So, you know, I don't think it's about how big a name you are. it's about how good you are around a boardroom table, how good you are in negotiations. And if Steve Morrow's got that relevant experience, then fair enough. So I'm certainly not going to be battering my keyboard into the early hours of the morning if it isn't the name I thought it was going to be. I think maybe Gilberto or Edo would be the two I would go for. But Arshavin would be great for Bantz, let's be honest.
He would with an assistant technical director of Nicholas Bentner. OG, coming to
drive.
You. OG, coming to you. You have any thoughts that differ from maybe Chris or Danny on this?
Well, I will say that when it looked like Monchi wasn't going to sign, and then when Overmars signed his new deal at Ajax, I was a little concerned when I heard that the club was going to handle it internally, and only because our track record hasn't been that great over the last several transfer windows, and I would say the last maybe two aside. Now, of course, we don't know how much Senlei or Hasfami had to do with the transfers that did come into the club. I think we can speculate on that. We can speculate on which ones were Sven, which one were others at the club. But I think before that, we weren't exactly stellar transfers. So I do get a little bit concerned. And then when you combine that with the fact that if we do get that Champions League spot, and Danny, you had mentioned this earlier, this is going to be a really critical transfer window for us. It's going to be critical because we want to cement that top four spot. It's going to be critical because Emery, it's another chance for him to bring in the players that he wants to bet his system. So for me, really a critical period. And I don't think having a makeshift team do it is probably the best approach. That's not to say that they won't be successful. So I think I tend to look at the way a club like Ajax runs their technical team. They've got the technical heart, which is made up of former players. So I love the idea of Edu, Gilberto Silva, Bobby Pies, Robert Pires would be great. And it's a collection of ex-pros from that club. So you've got that connection to the club. They oversee all sorts of things, not just recruitment, but they're looking at the technical style of the club. So then you can probably put Per Mertesacker and Freddie in there. Maybe four or five guys. One guy's in charge, right? Because you have to have somebody calling the shots. But, of course, our transfers have to get the approval of the board anyways. So something like that. Even if you've got a few guys involved, having a guy like Dennis back at the club would be great. You know, it takes away the factor of him having to fly all over the world to talk to new recruits. But just having that collection of ex-pros from Arsenal that have it in their blood, and you know, I named a few sort of from that Invincibles period. Certainly, we can look back further and take a look at what pros are around. But having four or five guys making up that technical heart, I would love to see that at Arsenal. It didn't work right away at Ajax, but I think it'd be pretty hard to argue with the talent that Ajax is once again churning out. They had some pretty shit years there for a while, you know, when they're playing that Egyptian guy up front. Oh God, what's his name? He played for Spurs. He's huge now.
Me too.
Thank you. You know, there were some lean years at Ajax, but certainly they look to be back with a vengeance. Not only their performance in the Champions League, but you know, you look at the young players that they're churning out that are being linked with the top teams around Europe. So for me, that would be the approach I would take. I think it echoes kind of where the other guys were at in terms of bringing somebody on that's been at the club.
I don't want to alarm anyone, but one technical director that is currently out of work, one Mikel Silvestre. Just saying. So he's 41, believe it or not now. But he worked at Rennes.
How was he a technical director?
He was working at Rennes in that position, and he finished at the back end of last season. So he's and another popular one off the purse. Some of you remember this name, Predrag Mijatovic. Do you remember him? For Real Madrid, centre forward. Oh, he's also an out of work technical director. So yeah, I was just looking down a couple of people that might be in the frame, but as it seems to be looking at this list here, and from what I could see, there's a lot of people in their sort of 50s upwards, I would say, most of them. So I'm guessing it is Sonny Anderson is actually a director of football now. Wow. Yeah. So I think it does have to be somebody with profile, but I love the idea of, like OG was saying, they're the heart, the idea of a group of former players with one figurehead. That would be ideal. So
how about you?
I have zero clue. I have been told, though, on good authority, that our very own John Welsh technically directs things, but I don't think it's the type of things we would want shown, maybe even on the big screen at the Emirates.
No, but he is up for an AVN award.
maybe you could check that out on RedTube. Maybe that would be more appropriate for him to technically direct things. Well, let's go ahead. Let's move right on in to. I'm going to turn this over to Danny Boy, right? Yeah, I think so. Yes, Danny Boy, for listeners' questions, because he has compiled them and will now ask our esteemed panel and myself these questions.
Jolly good. We'll start with Canada. Are you there, Canada?
I'm here. Over and out.
Lovely. This is not OG. Over. No one will get that apart from you and me. We're both laughing on the inside. Right, Nicky Wilson says, it's been 15 years since Arsenal's Invincibles won the league in 2004. Is there any way we can win it with Man City and Chelsea spending all of their oil money?
No. Hello, Nicky Wilson. Shout out to you, my friend. Listen, guys, you look at what's happening at the top of the league, it'd be very, very difficult to catch them. Now, that said, you did mention the repercussions of financial fair play. If those come in, I think we have a self-sustaining model. A lot of people get really upset about that. They want the sugar daddy to inject cash into the club. This could be part of the long game that we're in. But, you know, in the immediate future, I can't see us catching a City. Chelsea, they're obviously having troubles. This is the thing about money, though, Danny, and others. It doesn't guarantee that you'll win in anything. It just puts you in a better position to win. So there'll always be teams with money that can fuck it up. And there's lots of examples of that. And you know, you look at Chelsea right now; they look like they're in a bad way. It's just over the longer period, the teams with the money will win the games. There's exceptions to that rule, but yeah, I can't see us getting there. So, I think that's probably my answer. Chris is laughing at me. I don't.
No, sorry, I'm not laughing at you. Sorry,
he's throwing me right off my game here, Chris.
I've just found the perfect director of football that we need to get in immediately.
How about it?
I shit you not, this is a genuine name. He was formerly employed in Sweden, and he goes by the name of Dick Last.
Yes.
I mean, what? You've had Dick Law. We could now have Dick Last. Sweden. I mean, it writes itself.
What's funny is Chris is laughing at the same thing that women laugh at him for.
Hey-o! Exactly. No, that's Dick Quick.
Hey-o!
Battle of the Dicks.
I mean, you know, we'll take him. Or if not, there's always Dr. Marcus Ermschger. There you go. Oh. Anyway, I'll stop now. Sorry, that just tickled me. Dick Last, brilliant.
Ran out of gas there.
Noir Confidential, as usual, sent in some decent questions. He says, you will probably talk about it anyway, but we haven't. What are your thoughts on our April fixture list? Now, I did a tweet the other day from the pod account explaining that we, in 30 days, we have 8 games, 5 of which are away. And some of those games, with the away games, you travel one day and there's a 2-day gap between this. Sometimes there's 2 or 1 day between games if you include traveling. That is just absolutely mental. If this was happening in France or Spain or Germany or Italy, they may well go, well, we'll move this game here or we'll give you a bit more time. Here, the FA go, no, here, have all of your games. We're going to play them all at midnight and we're not going to help you a single bit. What do you think?
No, I think it's also what happens when you're in the league that has one of the top flights that has the most teams. You know, a lot of the other top flight leagues only have 18 teams and not 20. So you got to fit those matches in somewhere. And I think the good news, the good thing about Arsenal right now is the fact that we actually have a little bit of depth. We can rotate players and everybody understands their role when they come in right now. And that's the important thing because it's definitely going to be needed. But it is funny how, and I'm sure we only view it from the Arsenal perspective, but I'm sure other clubs have the same thing about the FA, where the FA just does not care about European fixtures. And they allow all the fixtures to pile up all at one time instead of trying to, you know, relieve some of that stress and maybe have you one of your FA, like a team like from England, maybe do better in a European competition. There's just zero thought put into it, it seems, by the FA, especially when it comes to Arsenal. I'm sure other teams maybe have some gripes as well. But, yeah, it's unfortunate. But the good news is I think, you know, if we can stay healthy through that period, I still see us coming out of there in pretty good shape in both Europe and in the league.
Totally good. Right, Chris, question for you from Noir Confidential again. He says, the other week, Messi was applauded by Betis fans after he scored a hat-trick against them, while Ronaldinho was once applauded by Real Madrid fans. What are your thoughts on this? Would you ever consider applauding an opposition player? I don't think it means applauding them when they get sent off, because I've done that many times.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't think of a time I've done it, if I'm honest. But yeah, you're privileged in life to watch some of the greatest players, you know, in our lifetime. We've got two. I still remember that Ronaldo hat trick at Old Trafford for Real Madrid back in the day. That was another performance that stands in just in my memory of amazing performances, Zidane in the World Cup final. That there's so many. But yeah, I don't see why not. I would never.
Did you ever hear Harry Kane?
I was just going to say that. I would never. The only time I'd ever applaud a Tottenham player is if they went under a car. No, that's a bit harsh. A lorry. But yeah, no, I don't. I think there's levels where you can applaud the opposition, and there's levels where you just don't do it. Rivals, I don't think you would ever do it. I think it's very easy for a Betis fan to applaud a Barcelona player. That wouldn't happen in the Bernabeu, would it? Let's be honest. So I think there are levels. But yeah, I don't see any problem with it. I'm probably the worst person to ask for this, because I'm extremely salty when it comes to opposition. And I don't like giving anyone any credit if it's not Arsenal, as our listeners know. But yeah, I think particularly if you're there and you witness something truly special. I've seen Messi play in the flesh once, and it is incredible. So, yeah, I don't see any reason why it's a problem. And if it gets some of the other stupid crap that goes on from people invading pitches and stuff off the back pages, then I'm all for it. Yeah, a bit of respect is no problem with that at all.
Right, question for all of you from Neil McKeown, no relation. He says, with all the recent mock-ups of potential kits for next year, and for lots of potential kits for next year, go and have a look at our Instagram. That's @_Bergkamp_Underland. Someone's just gone by on a bike and thought it was a UFO. I was thinking, oh, they've come at last. No. Yes, so... @_Bergkamp_Wonderland. Go and have a look at that on Instagram. We put up three or four things, about five or six things every day, and it's always Arsenal related or kit or boot or FIFA related for the kiddies. But remember, kids, FIFA is not real life. So, start with you, OG. What is your... finished the question. What's your favourite home or away shirt? And Neil says, 95 away shirt for me. That's the navy blue with a lightning bolt. So, OG, what's your favourite Arsenal kit?
Favorite home and away?
Not either.
I really like the Invincibles kit. The red with the O2 on the front. It's a controversial decision, but such a special team. But I'm also going to give a quick shout out to the 93-94 Arsenal Adidas away jersey. That's the gold with the three navy blue stripes over the shoulder. I love that shirt. So between one of those two, I think are my two favorites.
Shredda?
I'm going to go newer. I'm going to pick a shirt from when I've been supporting. But I'm going to pick that last Nike away kit. The bright yellow with the blue. It was what we returned to win trophies in and won the FA Cup in. It's just simple. It was traditional, and elegant. And that's sort of what I tend to go for in kits, is don't try to get too fancy. Stick to some basics. I think that was one of my absolute. That's still one of my favorite kits to wear, and I actually wear that to work because it does have a collar, so it's technically in the U.S. would be considered a polo. So I wear it to work and support the colors there. But it's just one of my absolute favorite ever. Sort of, it looks good, it feels good when it's on as well. And then we went to Puma, which is, you know, basically one of the worst kits in the world. So there's that.
Dear listener at home and on the toilet and on the bus, Chris is going to talk for the next 4 hours about kids. We'd like to leave. We'll email you when he's finished. Chris?
No, I'm going to keep it short and sweet. Over Mars, Old Trafford away, yellow with the blue sash, with the blue band around the chest. I think that was 97, 98 away, I think it was. JVC, Nightshirt, yeah. That one, like Shredder said, it was of its time. Some amazing memories in that shirt as well. So, yeah, that was the one. Home wise, I it's a bit controversial, but I do love the red currant that we did. I really liked it. I know it wasn't tradition. I'd love to see a play on it with the white sleeves. That would have been interesting. And always stripy socks. That's the only other thing I'm going to say. Always with the stripy. The candy cane socks, 93, 94, were lovely. Let's bring those back. But, yeah, there you go. Short and sweet.
Ben O'Brien's wondering what mine is. As long as it's 8XL, I don't care because I have sensitive nipples.
Oh, God.
And if you do want a
tape shirt.
You what?
Tape them up.
Is anybody else getting soft jazz through their headphones here?
Especially with the fireplace in the background.
I'm too sweaty for nipple tape. If you do want a shirt, go to our mate Gav from SheWall. Go to the Arsenal Shirts. Make sure it's got an S on the end of that .com. And if you go and buy the shirt, mention the podcast, and you will get a 0% family discount. In fact, they might even charge you more. So probably best that you don't do it. Right. This is one. I have to give this one to where was I? I had started deleting. We've done the messy one. We've done the shirts one. Ah, right. This is going to be for... Have you all had two questions each or one each? I can't remember. I don't know who I am. Normally this would be editing out. All right, we'll start again with you, Shredder. From Noir Confidential, he says, Maitland-Niles is getting a lot of game time this season. Which of our academy products do you think is going to be the next one on the step up to become a big part of the first team squad? The important part there is being in the first team squad, not necessarily being actually in the starting 11 regularly.
Yeah, so I think I've got two shout-outs here. One who is on loan currently in Germany in Emil Death Rowe. And I think when he gets back from loan, he's going to be somebody who starts to make the first 11 probably towards the middle of next year a lot more, or at least the bench a lot more at the middle part of next season. I think he'll start to develop a little bit more in the league. And I really like what he brought to us, you know, when he was here this year. So, and then I think currently at the current academy level, is it Bakayoko Sanu? Did I get that right, Chris?
Boyaka Sako.
Boyaka Sako. Okay. I knew I was slurring. But thank you. I think seeing just some of his tidbits from on Arsenal player, just the highlights that he's had in the U18s and the U23s, and it looks like he's gotten a good relationship as well with Aubameyang, who's been doing maybe some one-on-one training with him as well, which that's a great person to train with and to learn from. I think that's somebody who in the next few years, maybe not necessarily next year, but in the next couple of years, we definitely want to keep our eye on because he looks like he's got the total package, just needs to make sure he keeps his head about him, stays smart, and continues to develop.
Jolly good. Right, next question is from our very own Jason, but I can't give it to OG, which I'd like to because he won't know what it's on about. So you're going to get the one from Matt L. Roberts. Should Jenkinson be given more game time? Because he scored today, didn't he, as we beat Al Nassr 3-2 on the opening of their new stadium.
And our choices are right now at right back Jenkinson, Lichtsteiner, and Ainsley Maitland-Niles.
Yeah.
Would we agree? Ainsley Maitland-Niles right now should be starting in that position.
What, right back and right wing back or just?
Right back and right wing back for me.
Cheeky.
Yep, depending on which formation we play. I love Jenkinson. I'm glad that I do like the fact he's still in the club. If anything were to happen to Maitland-Niles, I want Jenkinson in there over Lichtsteiner. But for me right now, Maitland-Niles has been playing excellent, and he fully deserves his spot on the pitch.
Right, final question before we move on to Fife's forum. Park Fife. It's from our Jason, Chris, because this is a UK thing. He says, with the Spuds now new bog now finally finished and coming in at 1 billion, which is double the original estimate, does this prove that care in the community works but comes at an exorbitant price? I'd like to explain to those two what care in the community is. It's where you send all the people with issues, which is for N17 is just full of that, knee deep in them, their own dribble and feces
and joy. So is there actually a question in that, or is that
just answer it politely, otherwise it'll kill us both.
Isn't it more just a statement than a
it's factual. That's all we care about.
Typical Jace question where he's given us the answer in the question.
Exactly.
Yeah. It take me 2 hours to read it, like if he was here.
I think we should just say it's funny, really. Did you see the videos of the fans crying and that strange middle-aged bloke in leggings? What is wrong with them? What is wrong with them?
They're not allowed out much. I mean,
you're a full-grown middle-aged man with a man bun right now, so I don't know if you can talk too much at the moment, Mr. Carpenter.
Well, I mean, you know, I rock it. They are just, I mean.
Danny, what I will say, as we're talking about the new Spurs toilet, that actually leads us perfectly into Fife's forum. Mr. Carpenter, I think you have the honor of going full Park Fife tonight. And would you lead us through Fife's forum?
I will. I owe our listeners an apology, first of all. Sorry, it wasn't Sacco, it's Saka, of course. My Saka. Apologies. Oh, sorry about that. Yes, so Fife's forum this week. The question to our listeners was, this week's Fife's forum, what are your thoughts on Spurs' 9 month late, double the original price stadium? Stabby79 says they must be constipated. Should try some lasagna. Let's see what you did there. Nikki Wilson says, what the hell is a Hotspur anyway? To dare is to do, Nikki. To dare is to do. James Helson says...
Well, hold on. Somebody should have dared them to build a stadium in under budget.
In a budget, yeah. Who'd have thought? James Helson said, I think it's a delightful combination of toilet seats and paper mache. I can't wait to watch the director's cut with Harry Kane commentary. I have actually... got some exclusives that they are being played in the background as you speak. They are stadium.
And they'll be doing the crossbar.
Dribbling down the crossbar. That stadium look amazing with all their players gone, won't it? Ian492 says, I feel sorry for the Spurs new stadium. They didn't get the cheese room and no use for the trophy room. Could fit in their studio. Excellent modern art piece, in my opinion. Yeah, fair enough. Fair point. Matt L. Roberts, garbage. I like how you just go straight in there. Garbage. Tried to copy the Emirates. Also, shouldn't be allowed to play in the stadium at all until next season. If they do, they should forfeit all matches. Point deduction fine. 3-year transfer window ban should occur. Get your gentleman's not. Oh, that's another thing.
Matt, I want to tell you not to get your gentleman's not.
Amazing foresight there by Matt L. Roberts. To call
you the need next to leave
segment of the show. Well done, Matt L. Roberts.
Piss poor planning, Daniel.
He's going to be the last part of my forum.
Matt's gone in there, and I like that. Nice throwback to the band Garbage as well. Classics, for anyone that is listening. I know John's a big fan of Shirley Manson. But there you go. That is the general view. I think the general overview from our listeners is it doesn't matter if they have their own stadium. It doesn't matter if they rename a tube station. I mean, hang on, didn't another club do that before? Yeah, that's right. Sorry, they did. I don't think it matters if they play on the moon. They will always be shite forever in our shadow, mind the gap, twats. So there we go.
There you go. Right, it's time for gentlemen's nods, I think.
As if anyone might have sort of seen that bit coming.
We will start with OG. We'll come to you first. Who are you going to nod to in a gentlemanly manner?
I really have not been that active this year on Twitter. So I'm going to go with the old default, OJ. You know who I'm. Yep. You know the shout out I'm doing here. Yep. OJ and I are in a group called Twitter Transfers. And we share that group with another Jason from Portland, Great guy, big Timbers fan.
Go Timbers.
So he's at Loose Football, LOOS, and then football. Give him a follow, give him a tickle. Hopefully he listens in. And the other guy that's in there, and first of all, look at, there's our group there. So if you're watching on video, there's our WhatsApp group. You can see it. You
get, is it full of shredded nudes?
Twitter transfers.
Yes.
And the other guy that's in there has actually just contributed to Fife's Forum, Ian, underscore 492. So two really good guys. Give them a follow. It's a really fun group. It sort of started because back when subtweeting was a thing on Twitter, I don't think people do it anymore. We would all subtweet each other. And, you know, there's a punchline there, like none of us even actually followed each other. No. And so it began like that. We would be subtweeting each other. And then eventually we all kind of got in on the joke and found a WhatsApp group. So shout out to the Twitter transfer boys.
Who's next?
Right. You are, Danny.
Oh, right. My one's going to go to shared between two people. If you go to Twitter and it's at ARTY. BIANCO. Now, if you do use Twitter, you may well have seen he's an artist from Sheffield, and he has done the North Bank. I think it's the North Bank. And in front of it, he's done drawings of about 50, 60 Arsenal players, like Tony Adams at the back holding his hands up. And there's Charlie George laying on the, I think it's Charlie George laying on the floor in front of it. There's that bloke who mooned the Spurs fans when he scored against them. And they're all the different kits. He's done the entire drawing. And between him and Gav, they sent me one. Now, I said to Gav, I'd like to pay for it. Gav said, shut up, you're not paying for it. And he posted it to me. So him and Gav, who is at SheWar, that thing is available for sale on Gav's shop on SheWar. So let's go and have a look at that. But yeah, Artie, that's a magnificent bit of art. There is so much really, really good Arsenal art going around at the moment. And you can find all of it on Gav's shop. So cheers, Artie, and cheers, Gav.
Awesome. Mr. Carpenter, who are you shouting out this week?
Two quick ones. One is one of our own, Neil Robbins at Chimp the Gooner. He's still with us. He's still in our parish. We still chat to him on a regular basis. He's still very much one of the biggest fannies walking the planet. yeah, top bloke, and it deserves a mention. So hi, Neil.
He just got married too.
He did. You're right. Absolutely. So
shout out to Chimp on that one.
Yeah, Jason's very happy. I gather they're very happy together. So that's good. And the other one is Dick Lust. The Get Dick In Momentum bandwagon starts here. I think
hashtag
Dick In.
maybe don't look that one up.
No, I think we can all get behind the idea of a big dick in the boardroom this summer. So I'm very much going with my Dick In. Let's make it happen, people.
We need a wet room at the club as soon as possible.
Yeah, not a cheese room. That would be all kinds of. Oh, no.
John have a wet room in his basement.
Oh, God. The Welsh dungeon of terror.
My shout out tonight is going to go to at the Lion Gooner, my good buddy who I play pro clubs with, Chris Lodato down in Orlando. Florida. Big Lions supporter down there. Really good guy. We'll be Arsenal confirmed, basically all but confirmed, they are coming this year to about 2 hours away from my location, thank God. So we are already planning the summer party at my house. But yeah, at the Lion Gooner, Chris Lodato, great guy, really good striker in FIFA Pro Clubs as well. But I think that is going to wrap us up for this evening. Danny, Chris, especially OG, thank you guys for joining tonight.
Thank you for drawing the short straw and having to herd us like cats.
That's Danny's favorite saying when he can't get people to do any pods is you guys are like herding cats. Thank you all for listening. Without you guys, we'd just be a bunch of idiots here talking on the internet. But evidently you guys like listening to idiots on the internet. So we're going to keep doing this as much as we possibly can. Go check out our YouTube feed. Check us out on all the social media places. I don't know them all by heart, but I'm sure if you hit Danny up at all hours of the morning, he will be able to tell you. Please go do that. Danny, hit the button. Nanu, nanu, you cheeky fucking monkeys.
Hoi, 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 cheeky monkeys. And here's a little bit of shenanigans from before the podcast started. Hello, and welcome to a Berg.
Well, that went well.
Start again. Start again.
What?
Okay. We lost you.
I can start it again. Don't worry.
Your voice went so high, Jason. Only my cat could hear it. But
you
they
welcomed
loved
us
it
to a burg.
Yeah. Can you talk, Jason?
Talk.
Better. Lean back and then leaning forward.
What happened?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
You just cut. Leave that in and just do it again. Yeah, do it again. We'll just leave it in. Pretend that it didn't happen, people.
Christ on a bike.
You're so distraught. You look like you've frozen.
I have. I basically have frozen. All right, so we're starting this again, folks. This is a Burg Camp Hornwind, an Arsenal podcast.